So it's a delight to be back with you and to be sharing with you some thoughts and reflections from my latest book, a bit of a challenge and an adventure, Surviving Trauma School Earth. Do you think we're in trauma school? What do you think? No, you're not in trauma school. I want to meet you afterwards, you know, because I've never met a person that I ever scanned that I could not pick up some unresolved issue or memory facing us in the body, in the energy fields of the body. I'll give you a little bit of history. How many of you have heard me talk in the past? Okay, so maybe a quarter. So I'll give you a little of my esoteric background. I'm kind of like the Theosophical Society, actually. I've moved around spiritually quite a bit. My background is I grew up in Louisiana. And as a child, I wanted to be an archaeologist and figured that, however, I told my best friend, and his father was a banker, and he started laughing. So my dad started laughing when he said, you want to be an archaeologist. I said, why is that? He says, if you dig more than 3 feet in Louisiana, you're going to hit water. That's going to be a very short career. It's like, oh, never thought about that. But I had spent one summer traveling with an uncle who was an amateur archaeologist through Texas, New Mexico, and Colorado, finding arrowheads and looking for things. In those days, it wasn't a federal offense. You could actually have an arrowhead and hold on to it as your treasure, and I found one and was very touched by the experience. But I remember wandering for hours around cliff dwellings and just looking at the different cultures and the pottery types and things and being very moved. Little did I know that within 15, 20 years, I would actually end up having my own excavation and doing archaeology in Israel for about 13 years. And being responsible for a site that, ironically enough, turned out to be pre-biblical by about 1,000 years before the Bible even showed up. About 5,500 to 3,750 BC, the Chalcolithic period in history. But I was always excited about hands-on experience of the soil. And, you know, Pompeii just came out. I don't know if you saw the movie Pompeii when it came out not long ago, but I couldn't get in the first time I went. The schools had bought out all the tickets on Pompeii, although it turned out to be a bit romantic and so on. But the history, archaeology began with, you know, archaeology, the science began with disaster, with Pompeii. That's the beginnings of archaeology, where it preserved an entire city and the inhabitants and what they were eating and the clothing and although the clothing deteriorated, but the outlines of the clothing were trapped in the lava, in the basalt, in the ash. And it captured moments, scenes of families and children and so on beneath the ash layers. And so it gave us the realization that there is a way to go into the soil and to retrieve history in a way, to re-experience it. Earth is not unfamiliar with beginning at a point of trauma. Some believe, and in my book I talk about the fact that the Big Bang, as they refer to it, actually is kind of like a big flash, a billion-degree plasma burst, which then disperses and creates the universe in its dispersal, is a kind of an explosion. So in a way, the universe begins with trauma, does it not? Some would say if there is a divine mind that chose to create, I won't get into creationism or theories about that, but if there is a divine mind or creative act that decided to expand or share itself, it begins with trauma. It begins with an explosion. And as things expand and slow down, they coalesce into matter. Einstein said, matter is nothing less than slowed down, crystallized energy. So in my life, what I ended up doing was switching from excavating the soil. And in my second book, Living as Light, I talked about the fact in Genesis there is a play on words that gives you a key to interpreting the creation account, and I won't go much into that. You can always read about that part. But the important piece for us is that Adam, man, comes from Adama, soil. And that, here we're going back to Pompeii. So what in the world do you have buried in your soil? What is your experience in this Adama, this body of yours, and the soil that we carry? I would have never guessed, you know, 40 years ago, if you told me you could drop the patish, the hand tool, and scan the human body or energy field with your hand, that you could feel and experience traumatic events. But I discovered in 1983, the year my mother died, I sat up, bolt upright in bed in the Vatican. I became a Catholic priest, by the way. When the archaeology thing didn't work, I figured, well, may as well do something useful. In Louisiana, in a town in Louisiana, oh, you know, the healers were the Catholic priests, you know. I didn't know there were glitches attached to that whole choice, you know. as we've discovered now. My first bishop died of cirrhosis of the liver. The first pastor I was assigned to live with was a practicing alcoholic. In my family, we used to joke that we could walk into a room of 500 people and fall in love with the nearest alcoholic in less than 5 minutes. And we were all living with alcoholics at one point. I said, either God has a very strange sense of humor, or there is more to this trauma thing than meets the eye, because we were not from an alcoholic family. So how can you all end up living with systems, persons that are alcoholics, and not even be from an alcoholic family? Which ultimately led to the archaeology that I now do with my hands, which is, I guess we'd say it's trauma resolution. But what happened anyway, back to our story, is that I felt the moment my mother died, sat bolt upright in bed in Rome, Italy, and realized on some level I must have inherited her empathy, her empathic ability. She could always feel when we were in car accidents and injuries, would feel the physical pain in her body, would know which child was injured, would write the time down, say a prayer for you, and wait for you to call. She was good. She knew the time of my car accident. I called her 3 hours later and said I was in an accident on the way to college. She says, yes, I know, it happened at 3:23. I was like, you're right, 3 hours ago, but how do you know that? She said, I was sitting down reading, my body went ice cold, I felt a wave of fear, your name came into my head, so I wrote the time down, said a prayer for you, and I've been sitting here waiting for you to call. It's like, great, so much for not worrying mother, right? She already knew. So she was the first person to teach me that emotions are a relational bridge that do not have space-time limitation. What I mean by that is if you're in love, anger, hatred, shame, sadness, you are immediately and actively connected to that individual on a profound level. We know now that your conscious mind here with us tonight is 5%. Yep, sorry folks, you're down to 5%. The subconscious, unconscious, which covers everything else, is 95%. And in that 95%, if you think of your memories, your history, and you go into anger, your body tenses up, you feel tightening, nausea perhaps, anxiety, stress. In 95% of your mind and your physiology, you're still standing in Pompeii. You're still standing in a scene with somebody, still experiencing that cord of connection. My mother died in Louisiana, her trauma. I sat bolt upright in bed, wide awake in Rome, Italy, and I was on another continent. And she was the first to teach me that time and space are not what they appear to be, that our trauma history is to navigate trauma school Earth. This body is an invitation and a mirror for us to look at our finished and unfinished business, an invitation to learn to master our act of perception. And so if we're going to talk about navigating trauma school Earth, what we're really talking about is kind of combines all three of my work, my books, but to learn to live as a light being and to master your states of consciousness rather than be mastered by them. Up to this point in our evolution, the reason I call it trauma school Earth is that we have had proven 7.9 million years on the planet. Now, there's a lovely book called Forbidden Archaeology, if you really want to get esoteric. Check out Forbidden Archaeology, where they have all these weird objects they found beneath copper mines, dating back 160,000, maybe 160 million, as much as 240 million years on the planet, suggesting that we may have been around a lot longer than we thought, a lot longer. And, you know, even between the time I come in and give lectures, I often have to add a million years or a couple hundred thousand years. Well, now we're at 7.9 million proven. And the reason you're alive on the planet today is because of an amazing little thing that you do. And I think it's the key to our power. It's the key to changing medicine and psychology. And it's the fact that you have the innate ability to pause your physiology and the act of perception whenever you're stressed or overwhelmed. Whenever trauma occurs, oh lovely, I like the bells here. Whenever trauma occurs, your body has the ability to back up a millisecond, take a picture, consolidate the entire experience into a single icon for storage, and where is it stored? Some of my clients say, what do you mean, where do I feel that in my body? Aren't all your memories in your head? I'm like, not in a long time. We know now that your processors are your brain, your heart, and your gut. And of the processing centers, which is the strongest? the heart, 60 to 5,000 times stronger than your brain, your electromagnetic fields of your heart. So when we attracted the alcoholic individuals into our lives, because our definition of father, and I'm the first person that I know of, I thought it was not original, but I cannot find anybody that's published on these two heart meridians. About 5-7 years ago, I found two meridians over the heart, one that stores your more masculine or aggressive male relationship history, and one that stores your female relationship history. And based on what you stored as your childhood definition of love, you know, you paint a black bat over a white light, who comes running? Trick question here. Batman, it's your bat signal. Gotham City, come on, you are old enough to remember Batman, all of you. Give me a break, remember Batman. So you paint a black bat over a white light, Batman comes running. You paint an alcoholic definition of love from your father and a depressed, narcissistic definition of love from your mother, what have you found yourself able to do? You know, can attract every unavailable alcoholic narcissist in less than 5 minutes, or maybe that was the first marriage. In my new book, I call it The Shadow Marriage. And I talk about the four willpowers. You know, as a priest, I was trained to believe there was a willpower. Shame on you for drinking so much. Why are you doing that? You know, and they assumed it was a moral responsibility. Why do you eat so much? What's the matter with you? Up until the 50s, that's what we did for folks. We used a moral failure, moral judgment model. The preface to my new book was written by an American Orthodox priest who said, thank goodness somebody's talking about the new moral theology, the willpower model that has all four levels of will. And I'll be talking a bit about that. In the workshop tomorrow, I do a workshop tomorrow if you happen to have Fridays off or can escape. I'm doing an all-day workshop here, which I'll be able to go into more detail. It's also, some of it's in the book as well. But in the four willpowers, so we have choices that we make. The highest level being on a soul level, superconscious mind. Your moment, place, time of birth will give you a great deal of information about that. You know, what did you intend? Who are you born to? I'm Cajun culture. Love, food is love in Louisiana where I'm born. I'm part Cajun, part German. So we're going to have a super strong work ethic. We have the oldest German bakery business in Baton Rouge, Louisiana to this day. So we have strong Germanic work ethics. Perform, perform, perform. Not so much with feelings. My father didn't do feelings, you know. That's why we could attract the alcoholics, by the way. My father was the youngest of eight. Shy, quiet, introverted, couldn't say I love you, couldn't show affection, but he could work or give you money or show it through food, which we did very well in Louisiana. But he couldn't do feelings. So we could fall in love with the most dry, drunk, emotionally unavailable person in less than 5 minutes, even if they were drinking a Pepsi at the time. You know, and you could count on it that they were probably alcoholic and unavailable. So we had that uncanny ability. But in the process of trying to understand that, what I came across was the four willpowers that affect every choice you make. So back to the heart meridians, we attract what we carry. A lot of times the first marriage is a shadow marriage, as I call it, which means you haven't resolved your memories, you haven't what we call emotionally reframed it, which I will cover briefly with you today. We haven't emotionally reframed those, so you're still transmitting that dark signal. It hasn't been updated. We didn't know. We were told what? Put it behind you. Forget about it. You can't change it. It's the past. That is not true. That statement is only true for the 5% linear mind, that the past is over, dead, gone, that you can't change it. That's the 5% linear mind. The subconscious 95% does not operate in linear time. It's vertical, which means in your subconscious, everything is on hold and happened a millisecond ago. The discovery of the psychon, you know this, a smell, a sound, a feeling, and you're in what we call trance. You're in an altered state and you're back in that feeling again. Not only that, we know now from single photon emission computed tomography that your brain goes back into the original physiology and state of distress if you trigger a memory. You're back in Pompeii within a millisecond. You're back there again. And some believe we can go into other places and times, lifetimes. You could be in Pompeii. You never know. If you're afraid of fire, volcanoes, what is your reaction? What are your triggers? Many lives, many masters, Brian Weiss, right? We're learning about such things. I don't judge it and I don't label it those names because according to quantum physics, it would all be happening simultaneously anyway, and I can't figure all that out yet. But I do know if it comes up in your body and you're on a battlefield and I can feel and you feel that your head's about to be lopped off, we're going to reframe that and get rid of your neck pain And we can do that. You can release that. Because the subconscious, unconscious, does not operate in linear time, everything happened a millisecond ago and is on hold protectively. It's being stored for you. The heart meridians are a big deal, apparently, because from conception to present day, this is your law of attraction for relationship. Now, sometimes on a soul level, let me just say this about that first marriage you might have felt bad about, or somebody in your family having a bad first marriage. Sometimes it takes an awfully courageous soul to come in and agree to do the shadow part with you, to do the shadow work. And sometimes you can make it through the shadow part and come out into the light on the other side. Some relationships have done that. But a lot of first marriages are your trauma history attracting their trauma history. Imagine two bat signals going off at the same time. The bat creates a void, a vacuum. So a lot of times the first marriage is like two vacuum cleaners falling in love. You know, Harvey Hendricks called it the unconscious marriage. That says when your trauma history unwittingly attracts the other person's trauma history, you're meant to do the shadow work together. You're going to pull that up. You might bring up his worst, he might bring up your worst, you don't like what's happening, but it does bring it to your awareness. And it takes, on a highest level, a soul level, don't you think it would take an awfully strong, courageous soul to come in and play that out with you, if we have choice? And if that person had not come in at that time to play out the darkness, would you have had the courage or the necessity or made the decision to change the changes you did, leave when you did, so that you would be in the other relationship at the right place at the right time? Strange how that works, isn't it? So for some people, that shadow, maybe the first boyfriend, maybe it wasn't a marriage, but the early relationships often bring up our unfinished business so we can recognize it, do the work, complete the unfinished profiles, because we can change the definitions. The good news about the unconscious subconscious, where gestalt therapies came from in psychology, is your subconscious mind doesn't know the difference between real imagery and creative imagery if it's emotionally charged. So we've discovered some wonderful techniques for reprogramming the heart meridians and attracting healthy. And I don't believe it's difficult to do. There is a wise part of you I have experienced in my work that knows all of the colors, which means there's a wise part of each of us connected to white light. All spiritual traditions now agree the white light exists where? Where can it be encountered or found? The whole message of the Jesus thing, and it is a trauma, isn't it? The whole Jesus story, Christianity, my goodness. Death, crucifixion, it's a trauma case. He's saying this is the thing. But the point of the trauma is to bring us where? To our awareness of our natures as light. And that the light of the world now, whether we call it, we think of it in Reformed Judaism, that we are now the messianic presence, whether we think of it in Christianity, Islamic mysticism, where is the light to be found? Within you. And here's the proof. There is not a client that I have ever worked with in the 20 to 25,000 clients. I worked with Oklahoma City bombing. I was the primary trauma program at Cottonwood Treatment Center in 1995. I had just developed my technique in 94 when Oklahoma City bombing occurred. And I worked with some of those guys. One's trying to swim under the building to rescue children in the daycare center. And all they found were the floating bodies of children. Imagine the nightmares you get from that, when you're hopeful and trying to find and save someone. When Flight 800 went down in New York, of course, now we got another missing plane, right? Flight 800 went down in New York. TWA called me and said, would you please present your work to us? We have 5,000 traumatized employees. What can we do with that? And I said, well, the nice thing about the work I do is that I teach you how to transmit safety to your own body. I don't do it for you. That means that somewhere within each of us, we each know the frequencies for safety that we're missing for that millisecond in life where we froze. Because the trauma, basic trauma, is a millisecond in duration. We freeze, and then fight, flight, freeze kicks in, adrenaline hits, and you survived. And you made it to the Theosophical Society in 2014. And I'm grateful. It worked. Worked perfectly. You made it here. You're alive. You did it. Congratulations. You made it. You survived trauma school Earth thus far. But why aren't you looking more festive? Some of you look a little serious here. Why aren't you feeling happier? Because you don't feel in your body at times like you've made it through trauma school Earth. Because in a sense, in the 5% mind, we know it's 2014. But the truth of the matter is, in the 95%, you might at moments, maybe a lot of your life, still feel like you're living and going, phasing in and out of the past. We know now for a fact that you and I trance in and out of present time awareness 15 to 50 times an hour. We leave the present moment. So we have people that talk to us. I work at Miraval. I worked with Dr. Andrew Weil's integrative wellness program. He sent his medical residents to watch me work when I was doing this work. Because a lot of illness is about the fact that the single greatest compromise, and mark my words, single greatest compromise to relational instability, to the weakening of your immune system and your health issues, the contributor to the aging process, to your sense of inability to fulfill your dreams and goals, your success, your financial stability, is the fact that we're not able to hold focus and intention consistently, often without it being interrupted 15 to 50 times an hour. The single greatest compromise to the immune system, when you trigger a negative unfinished memory, your adrenals go up. Whenever adrenaline rises, do you know what has to go down? Thymus cell production, T cell production. The single greatest compromise in a given hour to your immune system is the kind of memories that you're going in and out of, that you're triggering. We know now from SPECT scans of the brain, your brain doesn't know the difference between the original, which my mother could feel, and in 1992, the memories in your body that are unfinished, which I discovered I could feel. If you've healed the memories when I scan you, I won't pick it up. That's done. You've forgiven it, released it, something you did, discharged it. Now, a lot of times we did what the priest or minister said. We did the 5% moral forgiveness model. But when we saw Uncle Harvey for Hanukkah, Christmas, the holiday, and we felt like whacking him with something, you know, and felt angry and violated, well, the fact was in your 95% subconscious, your body was saying, hello, you're still in the scene. We haven't gotten you out of the scene yet. And that's when my ministry shifted from the 5% moral model. It's like, ooh, we got to get people out of the 95% and out of the place in the body where they're trapped. Because every memory has a site location. Face it, all of your memories and experiences occurred while you were in your body. So every memory and experience you've ever had has an iconic reference point, a site location somewhere here. Memories are not here. Memories are here. Processor, brain, heart, and gut. Let's talk about the gut. We talked about the heart for a minute. The gut, you have more neurons than your whole spinal cord in your gut. So that little thing you have with butter pecan ice cream that comes up sometimes, that is not an accident. Your little sweets things or sugar, that food you're attracted to. I had one client, as long as it crunched, she was okay. And that, what the heck is that about, right? So I did the technique with her, and I'm going to show you the technique several times. Some of you can do it on yourself. So I said, when you feel like eating a crunchy food, where do you feel that in your body? Oh, in my mouth, in my throat. Is it inside or outside? Which, by the way, changes you into a holographic CAT scanner and activates 13 trillion cells in your brain. But anyway, you didn't know you did that, did you? So you scan your body in about 3 seconds, and she says, oh, it's deep on the inside. What's it like deep on the inside in your throat? A tightness, an anxiety. Question that clicks it, how young might you be when you first feel the need for a crunchy food like that? She said, oh, I'm 4. Can you see where you are? I'm in bed. What's happening? I'm sick. What happens then? My mother never shows affection or expresses love. She comes and brings me soup and what kind of crackers? Saltine crackers, exactly. And so she starts to associate that taste and flavor and crunching for the first time in her life with being nurtured. So later in life, when she starts getting anxious, what's the thing she always falls back on? The minute we identified the key that linked it in, her need for crunchy things diminished. Didn't resolve all the food issues, but it did diminish the crunchy issue. So how we medicate, you know, the foods and substances you and I have medicated with are often directly related to which nerve center holds the memory. Like I work a lot. I'm going to do a YouTube bleep on this, I think, at some point. But I need to do a little lecture on addictions and trauma. And part of it is, for instance, if you have a teenager with a lot of domestic violence, what's their drug of choice? What are they going to go for? I thought I heard somebody say it. What did we say? Pot, marijuana. Why? You smoke enough marijuana, induces black sleep, stops the nightmare, has some type of a dream repressant function, and also calms the gut plexus with more neurons in your whole spinal cord, where a lot of childhood anxiety showed up during the domestic quarreling or violence. So it calms the gut and induces what? Munchies, get hungry. So it takes away the anxiety and fear and replaces it with a hunger sensation, physical. And so suddenly, they're calmer. So the teenagers discovered just smoking a pot makes the domestic violence trauma recede. Doesn't resolve it, but it recedes. Take a person with ADD, what's their drug of choice? A lot of ADD stuff in our society. They're going to go for a stimulant. Had a young man sent to me 3 failed inpatient treatments. His family sent him to me. Please do something. He can't complete treatment. He sat down. I tried to take a history. I couldn't take a history. Every time I asked a linear question, I got an entire story running around in circles about what was happening. I was like, what happens? I said, what was your drug of choice? He said, cocaine. I said, when you use cocaine, a stimulant, what happens? Do you get faster? Do you speed up? Oh, no, dude, I just kind of slow down and go to sleep and watch everybody making fools of themselves. I was like, has anybody ever asked you if you're ADD? Nope. I was horrified. 3 inpatient treatments and nobody caught this. Nobody noticed his processing was entirely cyclical and too fast. The minute he takes Adderall, Ritalin, a little bit of dosage, straight A's, completes school, completes treatment, does very well. Don't know the sources of some of these things yet. We're working on it. Some of people believe it's trauma. You know, we're finding more and more data, some very interesting, subtle data. We're not quite ready to handle this data yet. There's a woman out of Tel Aviv, Roni Galapo. What I'm talking to you about is what's now emerging, we're calling consciousness technologies. Renit Galapo has done 2 pilot groups with autistic children. And have you worked with autistic kids or have autistic kids? Renit's done 2 pilot groups. Now you want to talk Theosophical Society and energy. Prepare yourselves. Because in the 2 groups that she's worked with, they were in the moderate spectrum of autism. She worked with the 2 groups of kids. And within 2 years, they're talking, developing normally. And what's the glitch? She doesn't work with the children. She only worked with the parents. And she says they're very gifted. They're outrageously energy sensitive and talented. And she says they're monitoring and reading a disconnect in an energetic relationship between the parent and the child. And when that, I didn't get into details with, I didn't have time. I was in a very brief meeting with her. And she said, but when that connection is reestablished, the child spontaneously starts talking, developing, and returns to normal development. She says, they're our future. They're going to make us accountable for our thoughts, our feelings, our reactions, and our relationships with each other. And when the relationship was reestablished, the kids are developing and talking. Both pilot groups doing very well. Wow, is that a shift? And invites us to think about consciousness. And I said, what about ADD, ADHD? Is it possibly in the same spectrum? She smiled. She wouldn't answer my question. I said, why did you pick autism as the research population? She says, because they're not pharmacologically treated. And she knew that she'd have problems if she went after interventions with pharmaceutical companies. She'd have billions of dollars going to discredit her and her work. And what's going on. So, consciousness technologies, what we're talking to you about here is the ability to change and heal and transform. So I gave you a little bit of the example. So the woman with the crunchy food, let me give you a couple of other examples about how this, what I developed as a consciousness technology works. Because this is something you do on yourself. This is what I call mindfulness about memory. Being aware when you're triggered and being able to release it from your body. Let's see which case I'll give you. Let's go back to food for a second. So I had a woman come to me one day and said, I think I'm going crazy. I said, why is that? My husband told me he wanted a divorce. I walked into the kitchen and I started eating handfuls of raw flour out of a canister. I said, maybe you're going crazy. No, I'm just kidding. I didn't say that. You don't tell your client that. I thought it for a minute. I was like, oh, dear. Then I flipped through the manual of mental disorders and there was no raw flour eating disorder. If you eat dirt, they have something for that. You know, it's called pica. You know, if you have other kinds of weird eating, sometimes that shows. If you have a little white powder you snort up your nose, they have a diagnosis for that. You know, we have things like that. But this raw flour eating thing wasn't in there. I was like, okay. So what I do nowadays, I know that you're a genius. You're way smarter than you've ever given yourself credit for. And your body knows everything that's happened to you, and it knows why things are there. I've developed a software program available for my certified therapists as of this month, or next month, I should say. We're finishing the manual. That if you want to record your client's memories and the way the body is teaching us the sequence that created the migraines, it'll give you the 3 to 5 memories that led to the migraine condition. If you want to ask why there's a cyst or a fibroid or a tumor in the body will map for you in a logical sequence the order in which the memories layered in order to create an immune system crisis and give you a tumor or a fibroid or a cyst or an illness. The body knows how to heal itself if you talk to it correctly. So we're going to map it and show it to the physicians and what it looks like. First global database for memory ever developed that I know of. And we're about to go public. I saw 7 years ago that if we couldn't prove it to the physicians, they wouldn't believe us. It wasn't going to make it. We were going to have to show them. But most migraines, especially any migraine sufferers, talk to me after. Especially if you have, do you still have migraines?
They're under control.
Okay. Do they move around on you any, or are they always in exactly the same place?
Same triggers, same symptoms, same duration, same treatment.
Okay. Where do they occur, though, in your head?
Oh, they're typically front to right eye.
Do they move a little bit or move around?
Not generally.
Okay.
Unless I'm vomiting, and then everything moves.
Gotcha. Okay. There can be several causes for migraines, particularly if the metaphor as you're working on it were to change shape, size, or location during the process. That's a series of layered memories. But much that we label migraine or disease turns out to be a series of layered memories, is what we've discovered. I was shocked in 1992 when I developed the work and discovered, I developed it as a relapse prevention technique so addicts wouldn't have to go back to drinking and medicating if we could resolve the originating pain sites. When we reframed the memories at the sites and the pain began to resolve, migraines, neck pain, PMS, back pain, chronic pain conditions, a lot of this turned out to be somatic relive of an original event that was being re-experienced over and over. Shocked. Didn't expect it to go there. Chronic pain, neck pain. So I'll give you a couple of examples, and I want to show you the verbal technique because it's quite simple. It's a focusing technique. The verbal part was developed by a psychologist from New Zealand, David Grove, who noticed, and the American Psychological Association approved this for CEUs over 20 years ago. And then he died, unfortunately, of a heart attack almost a decade ago. But anyway, what Grove discovered is that we always freeze consciousness. Did you know you can freeze? If we say there's one mind, divine mind in the universe, one consciousness, big mind, what does it mean that you have the ability to pause it or freeze it? Because I assure you, you and I are alive in this room today because we have the ability to stop the movie. You know, you go into slow motion a little bit before a car accident, bad news. Not only can we slow it down, but they've proven that we have the ability to pause and freeze perception at a millisecond before overwhelm, when we're about to be injured, about to be hurt. It's actually a protective act. You're alive because you protect so well. Unfortunately, what we've encoded and stored, which is done automatically and subconsciously, we have not been taught how to release. And so anything similar that comes along, a fragment of this three-dimensional hologram, and you're back there again in the same physiology. Now, you and I are alive today because we have stored and successfully encoded it. But when we trigger it, like I said, adrenaline goes up. So what David Grove discovered is that all of these frozen flashbacks, images, a lot of the aches and pains we store in our body are from the physiology of this frozen moment of consciousness. And if we talk to it correctly and can prove safety, it goes away. I wasn't so sure about that when I first started developing my work, but there were several cases. Now, the first, this raw flower case, one of the first ones. Let me get back to our story. So, woman says, I think I'm going crazy. I'm eating handfuls of raw flour out of a canister. So I go to your body. Where do you feel it? My mouth and throat. Inside or outside? Deep on the inside. Does it have a shape, size, or color? A black hole. Does it have a weight, temperature, or texture? No, it's just cold and empty. They'll always answer, but it may be a negative answer. The body knows. Anything else about it? No. How young might you be when you feel an empty hole in your throat and you feel like eating raw flour? Oh, she said, bless you. She says, I forgot about this. She says, from 3 to 13, I used to wet the bed at night. She said, when I wouldn't wet the bed, Mommy would reward me with my favorite foods, which were fried chicken and baked pies, which Mama cooked with flour. When I would wet the bed, she'd send me to bed without food, or she'd threaten me, and I'm not going to say that because then I'd have to work on a bunch of you before I leave, but she'd try to scare her with imagery, all kinds of awful images. She said, so I'd stay awake at night when I was little and try not to wet the bed. And then I realized if I could go to the kitchen and I could eat some flour off the counter, she'd say, see, my mommy does love me. And the flour to a child is concrete. And affection and love to the child are expressed concretely. It's the one time her mother showed her love is when she cooked for her. Sounds very Cajun to me, actually, but anyway, showed her love. And the flour was something she could control. That's pretty clever, because you don't hit moral development until 7 or 8, according to the psychologist. And at 3 to 5, she's figured out she can eat flour off the counter and feel better and stay awake. Finally, at the age 13, her mother took her back to the doctor. That's considered nowadays medical child abuse. Took her to the doctor, found a growth in her urinary tract, took a half-hour outpatient procedure to correct it, and it was gone. Half-hour correction, minor thing. She was shamed for 10 years. So when the husband said he wanted a divorce, what triggered? Abandonment by the most important person in her life. And what is the emergency survival mechanism she triggered? She walked into the kitchen and ate flour off a counter and said, see, I am loved. And she didn't know why she was doing it at the time. The whole memory was amnesial. 3 categories of repression. You remember the event. You remember the feelings. You just stuff it somewhere else in your body and plan to get back to it, which often we don't do. Or we remember the event, but we don't remember having had any feelings about it. We're in shock, wonder why we're not crying at our parents' funeral or such, or the divorce. Or the 3rd category of protection, we remember neither the feelings nor the event, and that creates traumatic amnesia or delayed recall, is the legal term in the University of Arizona. We can now prove what that looks like when the memory surfaces from repressed to conscious. But what's the glitch? Why surviving trauma school earth? Why the discussion in the beginning about Adaman body? What always remembers? Why would I be doing part of my work at one of the world's best integrative wellness spas, actually? Because they discovered you can't have a high-quality integrative wellness spa and do deep tissue work and hot stone work and Thai yoga massage without triggering memory, because what always remembers? The body remembers. Your body won't let you get away with it. Within 7 years of a trauma being induced, the cells in your body replicate. Cell biology 101. Your cells replicate in 7-year cycles, 7 to 10, except for brain cells. But they know now that brain grows new pathways. We call it neuroplasticity. So even the brain, if you're struck by lightning, I know somebody that's now a healer, because they rerouted. When they rerouted, they had all this energy awareness that came out. The other part of the brain developed. You know, and they're like amazing. So you can reroute and learn to walk and repattern and speak and do things from strokes and so on. We grow new neural pathways, thank goodness. But your whole body currently is 7 years old. Congratulations. Didn't know you were so youthful, did you? You're 7 to 10 years old. But if there's a trauma induced in the blueprint, and that blueprint, cells replicate around the blueprint, because I believe you're a light being who's occupying the vehicle right now. I believe you're an immortal light being that's occupying a physical vehicle. And I have a little proof of that lately. Maybe I'll get to that when we talk about it, because I have something that happened in the last year that was an eye-opener. Because I found a memory that was outside the body. Yes, you're more than your physical body. How do I know? Because I'm finding people's memories, some of them traumatic, stored outside their physical body. Now, when would you ever have occasion for a memory to be imprinted outside? When would you have to put a memory into the light body? When would that even have to occur for us? So I didn't expect this to come up. I really didn't. But I know for a fact that you're more than your physical body. I was working with a woman in the past year. I didn't finish my story about the one with the raw flower, but I'll get back to it. Anyway, I was scanning a woman recently, and I felt a pain 4 inches off her head. My hands don't lie to me. I've done 100,000 memories. And when you go into memory, if I feel a pain, it's an unresolved event that you haven't reframed. When you reframe it, I feel it leave, every time it leaves. So my hands have never lied to me about that. I've had clients try to lie to me, but I didn't feel a signal. That was interesting. But if it's really there and it happened to you, it is an actual physiological event, and it's still in your field. But I was scanning a client over the past year, and I felt a pain 4 inches off the head, away from the body. I was like, what in the world could that be? When I went to 5 or 6, it disappeared. When I went to 2 or 3, or the actual head, it disappeared. I'm like, now how can you have a physical? And I know gunshots, I know violence, I've worked with that before. I know what it feels like when I touch your body and you have a gunshot to your head. I know what a concussion does to me and how that feels. But I couldn't figure out why I was feeling a horribly violent act off the physical body. How could you and I store memory off the physical body? You know, it's like, well, this is interesting. Maybe we really are the blueprint. I always hoped we were the blueprint, but what would this be proof? So I asked, I said, you know, my hands have never lied to me, so I'm going to ask a question. And so I said, have you ever been proximate to or near a physically violent act? And she said, I don't think so. She says, well, wait a minute. I think, and this is a woman in Chicago, I have her name and information now because she showed up twice at my lectures now and is now telling everybody the story when she shows up at my lectures, thankfully. And I said, have you ever been near a physically violent act? She said, I don't think so. Well, wait a minute. I think my mommy told me that when she was pregnant with me, my daddy got drunk and kicked her in the womb when she was pregnant. And the minute she said it, I felt the pain intensify, and I was pretty sure that was the trance state. But she wasn't sure, and she didn't remember for sure. So at the end of the session, when we reframed it and it went away, and I felt it leave, I said I was pretty certain. But you know, you always wonder, even 100,000 times, this is such a new science. I've been this archaeologist, unless you can prove it, measure it, you record it. So okay, maybe when I hit 200,000 times, I'll completely stop doubting myself. But I'm pretty good now. I'm at 92% confidence with this. But I asked the question anyway. So I said, okay, she called her mother, and her mother's best friend answered the phone. She said, Sally, do you know if dad was violent with her and mom was pregnant with me? Oh, no, your mother said that he got aggressive when you were about 3. So she said, put my mother on the phone. So she got her mother on the phone and said, Mom, did anything happen when you were pregnant with me? Did dad hit you or hurt you or do anything during the pregnancy? And her mother started crying. She says, yes, he kicked me when I was pregnant with you. But I was so embarrassed about staying with him for 3 more years because I was afraid to leave because I was financially, emotionally dependent. She said, I was so afraid to leave, I stayed with him 3 more years. And she said, so I never even told Sally about this. And sure enough, as soon as she reframed the memory, I felt the pain leave. And she said, yeah, mother said he absolutely did. So I felt the blow, not to the fetus, but near the fetus. But if you are, in fact, much more than just what the eyes are giving us, if you're a dynamic energy field, then we not only have the ability to identify and feel and store memory in the body, we probably have the ability to feel that in other people as well. So I have 45 therapists now certified to do what I do. Of all, I'm everything from social workers, neurologists, radiologists, acupuncturists, marriage and family therapists, social workers, parents, educators, anybody that wants to learn it. We all need to learn how to do our reframing and help our kids and those around us. Partly because I believe 85% of pain in the average person's body is memory-based. In the average person. Now, some of you, 95% could be actual physiology. There's a migraine condition created by a circulatory imbalance in the brain that is a surgical correction. You know, there are some other sources for migraines. There are allergy sources. People in Desert Storm, I'm not talking about the fact that there are environmental toxins, there are pure physiological, biological events in our world. There's trauma around us of sources that I can't touch very well. But I'll tell you this, anytime you heal your memories that you do have influence over, you bring your adrenals down and you boost your immune system production. All of my coordinators in major cities are former fibromyalgia sufferers, and I am not a physician. I don't have a desire to go back and learn traditional medicine at this point, nor do I have the time, but I learn what I can, because part of what we're doing right now is a study of what is called symbolic illness, of what the disease is trying to tell you about your unfinished history. There's a holistic radiologist who, for instance, is studying the dreams women have before they show up with breast cancer. And the stories are remarkable. And many, many women had warning dreams and indications. And if they follow the dreams and they go to their oncologists or they go to their OBGYN and say, please do a sonogram. I don't see anything. I don't know. Okay, but if you insist, I'm concerned about that dream, let's do it. And they get it at stage 0. They get it when it's just beginning. And it's happened many times. But I'm working with cases now, and he's working with cases now where the people describe their trauma history, and we detail it in an exact description, and right next to it, we ask them about their ex-husband and what happened in the relationship. And the description they give for the ex-husband and the behaviors and the abuse that occurred is an exact match for the description of the distortion in the immune system and how it's functioning, or the blood disorder. And so the age of symbolic illness is upon us. We're now taking consciousness and understanding how a specific pathology occurred, and with software and technology to map it, we will show you the sequencing and the history if you insist. Your body will show you how you got ill and the emotional repression that led up to it, if it's memory-based. Like I said, I've worked with Desert Storm. I grew up, I had all the trauma in my family. My father, you know, he got yeast infection in his lungs from working in the bakery, so he had to quit. So what did he do? He went to work for the local thing in Baton Rouge, two areas of the country, highest in cancer. What are they? New Jersey and Baton Rouge, right across the river from the oil refineries. So what did the poor man do? Went to work for the oil refinery. While he was there, he was exposed to a colon cancer-causing agent. When he got colon cancer, we went to try to find the tests that had supposedly been done to protect and monitor them. Oh, we're sorry, the last test we can't find anywhere. It vanished. My goodness. Well, he lived with a colostomy for 26 years. He survived the colon cancer. That is not what killed him. Before my father died, I was getting pretty energy sensitive. I scanned his lungs. I felt a pain above his right lung. Now, in my new book, there's a chapter, and we'll go over that tomorrow for those of you doing the workshop. I'll go over body wisdom, and I did a little bit of that last talk I was here. But I'll go over body wisdom and what part of the body suggests what kind of trauma when it goes into pain. So lungs have to do with permission to take in life, to take your first breath, to be safe, to be on earth, to be in trauma school. My father was in his right lung. The right side of your body is male, typically. Left side is female. If you're left-handed, flip what I'm saying. Reverse it. But your dominant side is usually your male side, is usually the right, female on the left. My father had a tumor in his right lung. When I went to scan him, I felt it. And I don't feel purely physiological or genetic or environmental illness. I feel consciousness-based illness, memory-based. I felt a pain above his right lung. And the doctor walked in. I said, "Doctor," my father was asleep. I said, "Is the tumor here?" He said, "Yes, exactly." I said, "Is it about this big?" He said, "Exactly. How do you know that?" I said, "It's ice cold right here. You want to feel this?" I figured he could feel it. It was so strong, but he wouldn't do it. You know, like, "Yeah, right. Okay, whatever." You know, "Yes, it is there." So I immediately, when I felt it, I knew my father wasn't just dying of lung cancer. He was dying of something that was memory-related, and it was in his right lung. He lived in mortal fear of his father as the youngest of eight. His father was kind of tyrannical, overbearing, and he was the lost child. By the way, one of the traumas, two kinds of trauma we encode as icons. Level one is a single instant, a millisecond, a moment of physical, verbal, emotional overwhelm, a moment of abuse. Level two, a repeated pattern. Growing up with an alcoholic parent, emotionally unavailable parent, narcissistic parent, depressed parent, Holocaust survivor parent, maybe how they handled it. Could be World War II, Vietnam. Having a parent with physical, chronic, mental, emotional illness. Second grade teacher hated you. My second grade teacher was psycho. You know, could be first boss, employer, first boyfriend, first girlfriend, first marriage over a period of time. Moving to a city where the move was a disaster, the new school was bullying and a disaster. It could be having a chronic physical, mental, emotional pain condition yourself, or an addiction is level two trauma, a pattern. Having a family member, a spouse, a child, a sibling, or a parent with one of those conditions is level two. So welcome to trauma school. Most of us have a couple of level ones and a couple of level twos. Some people have a lot of one or the other, and many people have quite a bit of both. By the time you hit your teens, I can usually do three sessions with you easily in your teenage years because you've imprinted so easily. The younger you are, the easier it is to imprint, but as children, we also throw things off. We don't hold on to them. So I don't have to go through the whole technique with a child or an adolescent. My favorite group was the adolescents. "Oh, dude, I can feel that energy thing. That's amazing." You know, so at the treatment center, I had mixed reviews from the parents, but the kids are great. You know, "What's that guy doing to my kid?" You know, it's like, all right. I also discovered, as I was getting more energy sensitive, a point near C7, which also had been slightly spoken of by some different disciplines and healers. But there is an access point. Your C7 point is where your mother used to put your hand to support your little neck and spine as an infant. So in bioenergetics, they called it the maternal nurturing point. Now in neuroscience, we know that connections at that point link to a part of the brain that develops in relationship to mother-child imprinting or bonding. So when you want to help a person feel safe and anchored, you put your hand, you've done most of this technique most of your life, that part of it, you put your hand on C7, and you rub the little neck and shoulders of your loved ones, and you put your hand there. When people put their hand there, you feel it. In Chinese acupuncture, it's called the hammer point. It's a major nerve plexus. And in neuroscience also, C7 links to the dorsal channel of the spine and handles sensation, perception, and emotion, the three things that create a trauma. The C7 access point I found in 1994. When I put my hand on the C7 point, half of my clients went into rapid eye movement and started describing memories spontaneously, and the whole technique got 5 to 10 times faster. It's like flipping a memory switch. Oh, I forgot to tell you, I flew off a bike, hit my head on a fence post, and threw up for 3 hours. Okay, well, that's a concussion. Thank you for mentioning that, but I was picking that up. Nowadays, I've done enough of my own head clearing, and my second book, Living as Light book, was as you clear yourself and heal your memories, you are empathic, you are intuitive. We are all mystics, we are all connected, we are all spiritual beings. In other words, we use the word spiritual to kind of describe a light being, but when you think about it, if you get rid of all the dense red and black heavy energies of trauma and memory, you're going to feel so luminous and light that you really do identify as spirit or breath or light, as energy exchange more than solid. There are times when I meditate where I can't feel my physical body, I feel just energy. And I believe that's the real me, and at some point I'll leave this body behind and stay in that happy state, that pure energetic, because in that state you're free of physical pain. When my clients leave their bodies during sexual abuse, they're free of physical pain. You know how I know? If I'm linked at C7 when they dissociate, and they go above their body and start watching their dad abuse their body, all the pain in my hand disappears the minute they leave their bodies. There is no physical pain or emotional pain in their body once they dissociate. That's why we dissociate, to at least temporarily for a millisecond get away from the pain. But being bound to earth and a mission and a purpose, we eventually come back in and re-experience that. The good news is we can now go to the memory, insert proof of safety, and permanent release it. Let's show you how we do that. So with our flower case, getting back to our flower case, how do we prove safety in the body? So I said, if you could go back to this scene when you were, you know, your mother was threatening you with all the food and animals and so on, you're having to eat flour. If we could change this, what would you like to have seen happen? Oh, have my mama take me to the doctor sooner. Can you picture that? Yes. What color frame do you see? Light pink. Let's run that through your body. And the colors that you see for your memories, one thing I discovered in my science work, I spent a summer with NASA, right? So now NASA scientist, right? I spent a summer with NASA studying archaeology. They have one astroarchaeologist, okay? Anyway, one thing I did was we learned from thermal scanners that every form of matter has a unique fingerprint. And you, with your 7-color projection system, every picture you're taking of this event is unique to your perception. A trauma is a moment when somebody frightens you and you freeze the movie. When you freeze the movie, you're missing some of the higher frequencies because we don't freeze that movie under happiness and abundance. We freeze it under threat and duress. So when we freeze that, let me make it simple for you. If you have a little child draw a picture of physical or sexual abuse, they'll show you exactly what they're missing because they'll always draw the physical and sexual abuse with which two crayons? Red and black. No love, no light, no safety. Black, minimal anger, violence, red. If you have a child redraw the picture the way it should have been, they'll go to their bright nurturing colors from their history. If you have them, and how this works, if you have them close their eyes and move a color or feeling from the safe scene, and move it through the part of the body holding the original icon of tension. In physics, when you take red and black and you add all the missing colors, what do you get when you bring them all back together? White light. If this is the rainbow, with all the colors put back in, this becomes white light. So in this work, we don't change your history. We're trying to have you prove to the neurons, cells, and meridians of your body at that site where you stored it that you're not still in your history. When you can move the corrective feeling or image through that part of the body, it accepts reprogramming. We're safe. The bad thing is over. We're about to demonstrate to science and the medical profession. I felt it work 100,000 times. I think I'm a little shy about getting it out there, though, because I know it's going to upset a lot of theorists and some systems. I did a talk about 8 years ago at a polarity conference. They were talking about how much body work you need to release a memory. I was like, no, you don't. Not necessarily. I was like, you simply. In fact, here's the thing. If you lose the limb or the organ, what are you going to work on then? Because when the memory comes up, if you still got pain in the arm, you still feel like you're being shot, where's the memory being held? It's not in just the physical body. Physical body's lost the limb and the organ. It's not in the physical body. What did my client teach me when it was off the body? It's in the light body. It's in the etheric body. It's in the blueprint. Call it a blueprint. It's in the energetic blueprint that I believe is you. So does it mean science is going to have to embrace the spiritual to get it? Well, how long has your organization been trying to bring that about? You know, I'm about to do a talk for IONS, Institute of Noetic Science, in Atlanta, you know, in June. You know, we're trying to get the picture. This is science now. For me, it's always been science. Just like the archaeology, it makes it easy for me. Just like the archaeology, I could hit some. In fact, I told the director once we needed to dig in a certain direction. He was a little skeptical, but he believed me. And I started digging. 3 days later, hit a mud brick wall. That became five seasons. And the excavation that I discovered, I dug up a man my height, my size, my age, who was killed when a cave collapsed on him at 3750 BC. And I knew where to look for the body, and I knew what we'd find before I got there. But my hands never lied to me with the soil, and I knew intuitively which direction to dig. The same thing I would now say for the human body. My hands have never lied to me. I may not know what your memory is. That's not my job. I don't see people's memories. Thank goodness. I'm not a clairvoyant. I'm a clairsentient. I'm an empath. If you have any unfinished piece and I scan you, and it won't all come up today. We'd blow a gasket if it all came up at once. But what's coming up on a given day, you and I can work on. And your body even knows the priority, what memories to start with and how to get into it gently. If you're really strong, ready to go, boy, it'll give you that sexual abuse memory and you'll reframe it. It's ready. If, however, you're not sure, you really want to know if you were ever abused or anything happened, it'll start very gently and work up to that, very, very slowly. So, with the woman with the raw flower story, she reframed the memory picture, her mother taking her to the doctor, moved the color through. The raw flower thing was gone. She came back to me and said, you know what? She says, that husband? She says, I want a divorce. She says, I married my mother. He's been complaining and critical of me my whole life. He's never said a single loving thing to me. She said, I was terrified of leaving him because, she said, I think I married my mother, but I was so terrified of abandonment from 3 to 13. When I married my mother, it's like I've been trapped replaying the same trauma over and over. So I can see why when he said, I want a divorce, I walked into the kitchen and I started eating raw flour. It really is my mother. She says, I'm out of here. And actually, her life got a lot better as soon as she realized that and said, you know, thank goodness, I do want the divorce. And by the way, the raw flour stopped immediately. What about chronic pain? I'll show you the verbal technique. So I talk about navigating trauma school. What I'm really saying to you is the fastest, cleanest path to that is to get rid of the bat signals. You want to navigate and attract healthy. Your body is broadcasting and inviting every day, exchanging energy. Where there are unfinished pieces, we will draw those events repeatedly to ourselves until we clear it. But that's why all of our relationships, they become learning opportunities to see how clear, how, you know, obscured we might still be. Is it true? Do the hearts really reflect that history? My oldest sister and I, my mother had three, lost six. Then I was born and my younger sister. She had Rh negative subtype. So I said I kept coming back until I got it right. You know, kind of, you know. Anyway, I had to come in at a certain time. Anyway, so anyway, my oldest sister and I were both parallels, both valedictorian of our classes, loved the same subject, same thing. She married the alcoholic. I became a priest, living with an alcoholic. When I left ministry and she left the marriage, in a city of 300,000 people, We started dating members of the same family at the same time without knowing it. How do you do that? That's impossible. Not once you understand the law of attraction and the bat signal. You know, so in my book, I put in the two heart meridians, male relationship history, conception to present day, female relationship history, and you can update them. Thank you, Mom. Thank you, Dad. Our parents did the best they could with what they had. Some of them didn't even know what they were doing, but, you know, they did the best they could with what they had. Some of them, I know your hair wants to stand up right now when I say that, but the reality is it doesn't matter because they were so good or so awful, you ended up in the room today. So I'm grateful. Somehow they motivated you to search and to be an earnest seeker for your own healing, and it got you into the room today. So it worked, that insurance policy for you. Sometimes you pick two alcoholics. Any of you had double alcoholic parents? Come on, don't be shy. Yeah, at least three of you in the room had double alcoholics. That is your insurance policy that you're not going to end up dying of alcoholism. You see what I'm saying? If it's in your face, see it repeated so many times. You may have it genetically, but you're like, I am not going to go there. I am not going to go there. You might end up marrying it. You might have a period with it, encountering it. But it made you passionate to do it differently. Anytime you see a pattern three times, navigate trauma school, look for the patterns. You see a pattern recurring three times, that is a karmic issue. You came in to work on that pattern. That's why I like the software that I developed. I get to look at you with the history. And I'm still doing archaeology. I never stopped my archaeology. I just now do it inside your history. I'm like, wow, look at this. This occurred three times here. And that's why this is hurting on this side. And what part of your body is causing you problems and why this crisis is coming up. Very interesting. Chinese have known this for 1,000 years. You know that? You know, they see you limping across. Oh, you had a problem with your father when you were about 5 years old. And you're like, oh, how could he know that? How could he figure that out? Now, I doubted. You know, one of the theories, my technique is called holographic memory resolution, because one of the things you need to know about is the universe. What you're doing to navigate the universe is you're playing with holograms. The whole universe is a holographic projection from an originating light source. Some would say that means the divine mind is a hologram, is holographic, is three-dimensional. Subatomic particles seem to have a holographic property. You have a very holographic property. One of the principles in physics of a hologram is every fragment of a hologram contains the whole thing. Oh, the Cashy Experience, there you go. So The Holographic Universe by Michael Talbot is a great book to read if you haven't read it, because it talks about this old scientist converted to spiritual concepts sometimes based on the fact that the Big Bang became a three-dimensional hologram and suggested an expansion into some kind of holographic perception, like consciousness. Well, your consciousness is entirely holographic. All of your senses are three-dimensional or holographic. Now, in physics, every fragment of a three-dimensional image, close one eye. If I'm still 3D, it's not your bifocal vision doing it. Okay, we figured that out early on. It's something fundamental about your consciousness. Everything is three-dimensional. Sound, smell, taste, touch, feeling, three-dimensional. In physics, every fragment of a hologram contains the whole thing. When you forget someone's name, do you do the alphabet thing? Have you tried that? Where you go through the alphabet and you get the first letter and it'll light up when you try it. When you go down it, you'll get the first letter. Once you get the first letter, then you get the first name. Once you get the first name, then you get the whole name usually. Or the restaurant, or the place, or the song. Go through the alphabet because the fragment will access the whole. That's how our memories work. We use the part to access the whole. So you can take an entire experience and reduce it to a single icon, a single piece. So I was kind of skeptical about the part accessing the whole thing. How many of you have done acupuncture? How many of you have done reflexology? Some smart, a few of you. So I was a little skeptical about the holographic model in the early 90s when I was developing this. But I started doing workshops by late 1900s, early 1990s. Near 2000, my main international training site for trauma was the city of Sendai in Japan almost 10 years ago, 7 years before the nuclear earthquake, tsunami, you know, hit and the whole thing, earthquake, tsunami, nuclear leak. The city, largest city near the triple disaster was the city of Sendai. I started training trauma therapists there 7 years before that event took place. You know, like I said, there's a bigger mind than I at work in this. But one of the attendees was the emperor's physician's daughter. And you know, I've learned, you're my teachers. I always learn something, like the woman with the pregnancy issue. I was like, oh my God, memory is off the body, not just in the body, it's in the feels. It's in the fields. We're light beings, and it's in the field. Anyway, so I was in Japan. My clients teach me. One of them was the emperor's physician's daughter, and she offered to do reflexology on me. Oh, I'd be very honored. No, sensei, I'm very honored. Okay, we did our, you know, little back and forth thing for a while. But she agreed to work on me, so I was very grateful. Well, I thought it'd be like Miraval, you know, a nice foot massage, very relaxing. Well, in Japan, they pull out a thing that looks like a knitting needle. And they proceed to jam it into all the points in your foot, especially at the tender nerve junctures. And she hits one point, and I kind of felt like that cartoon with a cat hanging from the ceiling, like, you know, how do you get out of here? Can you? Is it okay to scream during reflexology and to make noises? But through the translator, she says, would you please ask him if he almost died of bronchitis when he was 2.5 years old? And I'm not kidding. That is the question she translated. And I almost jumped off the table right there. I was like, you've got to be kidding. And there was nobody in that room or in training in Japan that had any idea about my childhood trauma. I'd never even discussed it. But my one near-death experience was at 2.5, I almost died of bronchitis. I was in an oxygen tent and packed in ice. Fever went up to 106. They thought I was going to die. My mother had already lost the previous 6, so she made the priest and the pediatrician, actually they insisted on spending the night in the room with me. And obviously I made it. But after she asked that question, she said, ask him if it's okay if I poke around his rib cage. I said, sure, after that, poke whatever you need to poke here. So she's poking around the rib cage. He says, oh yes, you have scar tissue between these two ribs from bronchitis at 2.5. I was like, how could you know that? How could you know that from a foot? So she showed me a diagram. And all what the Chinese figured out, where all the nerve endings, which meridians and the energy field linked to what part of the foot. It was the left foot. It was the part that dealt with pulmonary lungs. It was very tender, which, by the way, just regained some tenderness recently. So I'm working on that with an acupuncturist. But it was very tender. And she said, this part means pulmonary. This part means a serious illness. And the positioning suggests between 2 and 3 years old. I said, okay, thanks. The part accessed the whole. You know, nowadays your hands, as an addictions counselor, I can get certified to do auricular acupuncture because the same map in your feet occurs in your ears. So I could actually get certified to put little needles in your ears. Thank goodness I haven't done that yet. I had a trauma with needles as a child. Okay, I did reframe that. I can do needles now. I'm fine. But I'm not going to do it to anybody else. Thank you very much. You know, but you can get certified to do auricular acupuncture because the same stimulation boosts the blueprint and the physical body heals because mind is primary. Consciousness rules body. According to quantum physics, consciousness creates body. You're creating this body right now. Like, well, I can't be creating this body. If I was creating this body, I'd be thinner, I'd have more energy, I'd have fewer wrinkles, I'd have fewer aches and pains. I didn't say you were consciously creating this body yet. That is where we're headed. That's where we're going. Right now, you know, how much time do we spend? Gary Zukav in The Seed of the Soul said, humankind's path of evolution up to this point has been mostly unconscious from unconscious intentions. What the heck is an unconscious intention? Conscious intention was I'm going to go to the Theosophical Society and listen to a lecture tonight or participate in a workshop. Unconscious mind, well, sometimes that comes up too. I get people when they're going to Miraval, I said, you know, you told your uncle you were going to Miraval, your dad? Yes. What did he say? So you're going where? How much are you spending on that? You know, what does it cost? What do they do there? Massage. What kind of massage? Hot stone massage. What do they charge for that? $240. $240, I'll tell you what, stay here, give me $20, I'll rub you with a hot rock and save you the trouble, right? Save you the trouble, you won't have to go there. But maybe you don't have relatives like mine, but I bet you do from their laugh. So, you know, yeah, but those little triggers. So we have good intentions, we want to accomplish things, we have lovely 5% intentions. And in areas of your life, like today, you set an intention to come here for the lecture, you did it. No problem, well, maybe no problems. You might have had some interruptions on the way here. You might have had interruptions that tried to get you off track today. But you still manifest it anyway. But there are areas of your life where you try to manifest things, and it just has not gone well. We just don't do well in areas where there's a contradictory message. You can't do that. You're not smart enough. You're not good enough. You're not worthy. They found now that your parents' beliefs about money have formed that unconscious early line blueprint about, well, we get near money, but we don't really get money. You know, We get close to money, but you don't really hold on to money. You know, what are you holding on to? What were your parents' beliefs about those things? We recorded everything they said and did and how they did it. We witnessed it. We imprinted that as our first definitions. So part of navigating Trauma School Earth is to seize some opportunities to reframe these meridians and to reset the default parameters we were given from childhood and from trauma. In the new book, there's a whole chapter on reparenting, because one of the big pieces is, thank you, Mom, thank you, Dad, but this didn't work for me. You know, a lot of them did their best. It was okay. In those days, even, it was probably pretty good. But for you and I in this day and age to attract a healthy soulmate partner, those standards, if you can answer that question, did what they give you, did what they teach you, does it serve as a sufficient model for intimacy in your current life? Because if what they did and how they did, now I knew by seventh grade my father wouldn't work. But that's when I thought I'd find another masculine system, and I chose the Catholic priesthood as a substitute. I didn't realize they were as emotionally unavailable and more alcoholic and sex addicted than my father ever was. So I was like, okay. So we learned over time, we've all learned that systems, even the ones we thought immaculate and divine, you know, have addicts in them. You know, there's not a system that doesn't have trauma survivors. There's not a system. Every business and institution right now, I can tell you, that I've worked with. And oh my goodness, I work on all the people that are traumatized by the famous people too, you know, the speakers. And we're all human beings in a planet that's had 7.9 million minimum years of traumatic imprinting without a lot of successful reframing, resolution. What we've been doing is doing little relived psychodramas from lifetime to lifetime, trying to get it better. My goodness, that's a bit slow, isn't it? Yeah. That's tedious. Really, you're going to have to just keep playing out different roles until you get it right? For heaven's sakes, why don't we learn to focus, go into the memories, and learn to reframe it? So as far as skills go, this is an exciting time. We have new opportunities for emotional reframing. What is it that it keeps you in the past? What is it that attaches you? We finally figured that out. What is it that attaches you to the past? So when you think of the memory, the feeling that you're still in it. But SPECT scanners taught you it's not just a feeling. When you trigger that feeling that you're still in it, your body, you shape-shift and you go back into the physiology and exact same brainwave state as the unresolved memory. Which is why you're tired, because you're shape-shifting into your physiology of abuse at 5. Or 12 or 15, and when you trigger that one fragment of the holographic memory, you're shape-shifting into the quantum physiology of the past. And when you do that, we do that 50 times an hour, what do you think your adrenals are supposed to look like? Of course you're in adrenal burnout. Of course we're tired. We've wondered for millennia, why are we even aging? Why is the body aging? Now the Swamis in India said often it's the tension between the current physical body and the emotional body trying to heal, move on. And that tension, you know, the current body trying to have something pleasant in present time, you go into a memory of the past, you now have two competing physiologies trying to gain control of the body at the same moment. Do you have any idea, if we're doing that 50 times an hour, how much unfinished business are we playing out in the tension and stress of that experience? So anyway, in terms of navigating, I've given you a little bit of the history. I want to give you one more example. Two things, actually, I'll give you. Close your eyes for a moment. This is a skill you're going to take home with you. I'd like for you to picture a beautiful, safe place in nature. It can be real or imaginary. Beach, mountains, lake, ocean, forest, garden, park, butterfly garden. And as you picture that place, what's your favorite color? Because color is an infinite language, and the colors you see are unique to your body and your computer. Now you can picture a blue, turquoise, you can picture a waterfall coming down upon you. I like to breathe in color because it's a wavelength. Ruach in Hebrew is breath, wind, spirit. So it permeates your whole energy field and your spirit when you breathe it in. And picture it oxygenating all the cells in the bloodstream of your body. So picture that beautiful place in nature. Breathe it all the way through. And I want you to do this twice a day for the next month. Anything you do 50 times is installed in the supercomputer, in the subconscious, and will be there when you need it. The second piece is I like to show you the level 2 technique for trauma. I'll be going over this in detail tomorrow. If you're there at the workshop, that'd be great. If not, please practice this when you can. Pile up, please pile up outside of yourself at a safe distance all the stress, tension, anxiety you've been carrying. If there's a particular feeling, you can do that. But pile it up outside of yourself at a safe distance. Once we pile things up, often we put them at a distance, they get bigger, we get to see how big they really are. So today we'll do tension, responsibility. Behind that mountain of tension, responsibility, I'd like for you to ask permission to see all the persons, systems, individuals, institutions contributing to that. Can you see who's in the lineup in the distance? Now I'd like for you to pile up, without judgment, in front of those people what you now know you can't fix for them, can't change their issues, their addictions, their baggage, their challenges, the things they've been through. If you could pile up in front of them what's really theirs that you cannot change and fix, cannot alter, and let's ask their angels, their guides, their higher self to help them heal that when they're ready, because I believe we all heal our stuff eventually to get home. But let's ask their angels and guides to help them heal their own issues and baggage. And let go of it yourself, because if you try to make them heal using your colors and your timetable, that's your ego talking, that's not letting them heal. And you abuse them when you take away their chance to heal their own stuff. So let's give them their stuff, even coworkers, other people, give them their stuff. Now, if you go back to your original pile, how much of the original pile is left that actually belongs to you? Can you see how much remains that's really yours? Now, ask your angels, your guides, your higher self, what colors do you need? That saying, God never gives us more than we can handle, the universe never gives us more than we can handle. What colors come to you to replace that big thing that wasn't yours? And to manage what's left. Can you see what beautiful colors? You can think them or see them, but please breathe them through your whole body. And to know you always have the colors you need to heal and complete your own process. And just breathe them through your body for the next few days. If there are other aches and pains that are still in your body, there may be individual memories, ones and twos, that we still need to work on sometime. But I showed you the level 1, the single scene event, reframe it, picture the way it should have happened, what color frame, run that through your body. Level 2, pile it up, give back to those what's theirs. This is a visual form of the Serenity Prayer. It helps you discern what you can change from what you cannot, and to not try to play God with things that you can't. When we try to do that, we can abuse others, because that's our ego wanting them to heal on our timetable. And often they won't do that and can't. So we let them heal when they're ready. What colors do you need? Breathe your colors once more through your body. And I'll give you one other little clue from a chapter in my book before we close. What size physical body do you need? This is about weight loss. There's a chapter called You're Dieting the Wrong Body. Because if you're trying to eat for the size of that mountain you started with, your metabolism will not speed up and your appetite will not diminish. It will increase if you're eating for a mountain of responsibility. So if you give that mountain and release all that isn't yours, how big a physical body do you see is left? How big a physical body do you need to handle what's yours? And what color frame do you see around your nice, lighter, updated body? Little more energy, little less tired, little less stressed. I want you to run that color through your body for the next few days. Soon as I did that exercise, my appetite dropped by 50% and my metabolism sped up so that when I exercise, I see it almost immediately. I talked to some therapists about that. Like, you're right, I think we're eating for the size of our weight of responsibility. Which means you are a light being, and sometimes you're eating for the size of your emotional body. You're eating physically for the size of your emotional body, and it doesn't work well. That's why you keep putting weight back on in spite of what you're doing. Does that make sense? It's our emotional eating issue for some of us. Let's take a breath, move your safe color once more through your body.